This week, a Toronto police officer was accused of exposing himself to children in a toy store. A Pennsylvania police officer was charged with sexual assault for the second time in 2 weeks. A California sheriff's deputy was arrested for manslaughter, and a Michigan police officer was charged with assaulting a 15-year-old. We will have all of this news and a lot more starting in just a few seconds. This is Bad Cop No Donut for the week of April 13th, 2006. I'm Ron Anisich with your weekly wrap-up of North American police brutality, misconduct, and corruption. Stay tuned after this week's headlines for an interview with Kim Bell, mother of Michael Bell, who was killed by police in Kenosha, Wisconsin on November 9, 2004. But first, here is a look at what the police did to us this week. A Stanislaus County, California sheriff's deputy was arrewon Monday for committing a lewd act against a child. KXTV says that Deputy Don Bally has been placed on leave while an investigation is conducted. No details about the nature of the allegations has been released.
He was in shock. Understandably so. You know, he looked like he was in shock, just walking around in a daze.
It's a very unfortunate, very sad story for all people involved. At some point, they were holding on to each other. And the gun ended up in a position where it was pointed towards the victim. The investigation at this point, all the evidence indicates that there was no anger involved, there was no argument, there was no fight, there was nothing like that.
I feel for him, the family. I especially feel for the victim's family.
A Los Angeles County Sheriff's deputy was arrested for involuntary manslaughter on Sunday. The Los Angeles Times says that Officer Chris Sullivan is accused of accidentally killing a friend who was a fellow Marine reservist. Sullivan was arrested after police responded to a reported shooting and found Sullivan's friend dead from a gunshot wound to the head. Sullivan is being held in custody. A police officer in Walnut Creek, California, was charged this week with holding three people hostage at gunpoint. The Contra Costa Times says that Officer Theodore Chang is charged with three counts of false imprisonment using a dangerous weapon and one count of exhibiting a firearm. The charges are related to an on-duty incident where Chang drew his weapon on a couple and one of their female relatives in December 2005. Chang allegedly got into a dispute while he was working at a roadblock when he pulled the gun and pointed it at the driver of the vehicle and threatened the passengers. He faces up to 5 years in prison if he is convicted on the charges. Chang is currently on administrative leave from his job. A Contra Costa County, California sheriff's deputy pleaded guilty to possession of child pornography earlier this month. The San Francisco Chronicle says that Officer Bradley Peterson admitted to owning more than 800 images and videos of children engaging in sexually explicit conduct. Investigators discovered the images on two computers owned by Peterson and a number of computer disks. Some of the children in the images are as young as 3 years old. Peterson will be sentenced in July, but will have to register as a sex offender in the meantime.
They have placed Portland Police Chief Derek Fosworth on administrative leave, effective immediately. During any investigation, it's the mayor's job to first ensure that all parties are receiving a fair and impartial hearing, and second, to protect the city's ability to serve its citizens effectively. To be effective, the chief of police must enjoy the full confidence and trust of the men and women of the Portland Police Bureau, must also hold the full confidence and trust of the people we serve, the people of Portland. I believe that the intense interest in this investigation is distracting the Bureau from its primary mission and may erode the confidence and trust I believe are essential to their mission.
The chief of police in Portland, Oregon, was accused of many incidents of sexual misconduct last week. KPTV reports that Chief Derek Fosworth was accused of sexually harassing a female police employee. In a claim filed in court, the woman has documented sexually explicit emails, intimidation, and emotional distress. Some of the explicit email was sent from a work computer, and the city has launched an investigation. Fosworth claims he had a brief relationship with the woman around 5 years ago. Fosworth was suspended indefinitely on Tuesday. A Corvallis, Oregon police officer resigned last week after he was accused of carrying on a sexual relationship while he was on duty. An Associated Press report says that Officer Ryan Thayer was accused of having sex with a university student while he was supposed to be on patrol and then lying about it when questioned by superior officers. He is also accused of disobeying orders and using a department cell phone to call a girlfriend. Thayer cited personal reasons for his resignation in a letter. The Corvallis Department is also investigating Thayer and other officers who responded to a party. Photos of the officers posing with lingerie-clad women were taken at the party and showed up later posted on a popular website. A Vancouver, British Columbia police officer has been charged with two counts of uttering threats. The Vancouver Province reports that Constable Tristan Johnson was charged in January, but the information was not made public until last Friday. Johnson is accused of threatening to harm or kill his wife, who is also a Vancouver police officer. The charges are believed to be connected to two separate incidents in late 2005. Johnson is suspended with pay. An RCMP investigation is continuing.
Fortunately, in this situation, we had a concerned parent that was able to find some information out and report it to the police. They had a report that a teenage girl had been persuaded to take nude photographs of herself and email them, and was having an instant messenger conversation with a gentleman in Alamosa.
It could be really anybody you see on the street.
A police officer in Alamosa, California, was arrested last Wednesday after being accused of having inappropriate sexual activity with a 15-year-old. The Alamosa Valley Courier says that Officer Brian Desoletz is charged with sexual exploitation of a child, unlawful sexual contact, and obscenity. He is accused of having a sexual relationship with a girl he met on the internet. Desoletz claimed to be a 17-year-old when he contacted the girl. He is currently free on a $10,000 bond. A police officer in Denver, Colorado, is suspended while an investigation of a sexual conduct allegation against him is conducted. The Denver Post says that Officer Adam Nuanez is accused of touching a woman inappropriately after he and other officers responded to a call at a motel on March 6th. Nuanez is accused of returning to the woman's room after the other officers left. He was in uniform and on duty at the time of the incident. Nuanez is not currently facing any criminal charges connected to the incident. He has been suspended since last month. A Colorado State Patrol trooper was arrested last Friday for watching a woman undress in a department store change room. The Rocky Mountain News says that Trooper Eric Bufkin was arrested by police in Golden, who were called to the department store. Bufkin is charged with unlawful sexual contact. He has been placed on administrative leave and will appear in court next on June 6th. A former Iowa State Patrol trooper was sentenced to 2 years of probation last Wednesday for the sexual abuse of a child. The Des Moines Register reports that Carl Kluender was found guilty of having indecent contact with a child in 1993 at his parents' home in Denison. In addition to the probation, he will also be required to register as a sex offender, receive treatment, and must not have any contact with the child who he abused.
The officer struck the victim with a closed fist, also grabbed him about the head, and pushed his head into the bus window.
The officer's employment was terminated yesterday afternoon.
We believe the officer assaulted the young man, and whether he was a threat or not, in this particular scenario, the officer committed a crime.
No arrest was made.
If he had a reasonable belief that the student committed a crime, he should have arrested the student.
Nowhere in our vicinity. Our children don't deserve that.
A police officer in Flint, Michigan was charged with assaulting a 15-year-old last week. An Associated Press report says that Officer Andrew Gauthier is accused of beating the child on a school bus. The incident was videotaped by a camera on the bus. Gauthier is facing more than 3 months in jail if he is convicted. A Toronto police officer was arrested last Monday at a toy store after he was accused of exposing himself to children. The Toronto Star says that Officer Robert Wright is charged with committing an indecent act and two counts of possession of stolen property. The stolen property charges are related to another separate incident. Additional charges may be laid against Wright in the future. For the time being, he is free after being granted bail by a judge last Thursday. He will appear in court next on May 9th. A Royal Canadian Mounted Police officer stationed in Baddeck, Nova Scotia, was arrested on Sunday when police responded to a domestic dispute at his home. The Halifax Chronicle-Herald says that the unnamed officer is charged with assault and may also face firearms-related charges in the future. The officer will be the subject of an internal investigation and will appear in court next on April 28th. A Providence, Rhode Island police officer was disciplined last Wednesday for allowing a prisoner to go free at the end of his shift. An Associated Press report says that Officer Roland Reed was guarding a man who was accused of assaulting another officer at a hospital where the prisoner was being treated for minor injuries. At the end of his shift, a replacement had not arrived when Reed decided to go home because he was tired. The prisoner was released but was later apprehended by other officers. Reed will not appeal his punishment, the nature of which is not known. A Manchester, Connecticut police officer was arrested on Wednesday for drunk driving. The Hartford Courant says that Sergeant William Young was taken into custody after he left the scene of a drunken collision. He is charged with driving while intoxicated, evading responsibility, and unreasonable speed. Young is on paid leave until an internal investigation is completed.
We gave them that shield. We gave them their power. We trusted them, and we expected them to protect us from evil. They didn't deliver us from evil. They themselves were evil personified.
Two former New York City police detectives were found guilty last Thursday for their roles in 8 murders. An Associated Press report says that the 8 murders attributed to Louis Eppolito and Stephen Caracappa were committed between 1986 and 1990, when both were employed by the NYPD. Both are also accused of having ties to organized crime. They were arrested for the murders, which they are accused of committing themselves, in March 2005. Although both plan to appeal the decision, their bail was revoked and they will be held in custody until their May 22nd sentencing.
He doesn't feel that he's committed any crimes. The chief determined in his opinion that the property was abandoned, and as a result, it became property of the village, and then he decided to sell it to a person. You know, it's the way he sold it and then ended up with it, it just doesn't look right. It doesn't look good, whether it's a crime or not.
If there was somebody else, they'd probably get plus full charges. You know, that's just like slapping him on the hand and he's on his way out.
The chief of police in Clyde, New York, resigned last Thursday amid an investigation into alleged misconduct and theft. The Finger Lakes Times says that Chief Clint Gary is accused of being in possession of property seized during a 1999 drug raid. Some electronic equipment, which still belonged to the person who it was originally seized from, was found in Gary's home. $6,000 worth of clothing, which were also seized, are also missing. Gary claims he sent the clothing to aid in the Hurricane Katrina relief effort. The clothing was also the property of the person it was seized from. An investigation is continuing. A police officer in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, was accused last week of sexually assaulting his ex-girlfriend. The Lancaster Intelligencer Journal says that Officer Kenneth Eckert is accused of repeatedly abusing his ex-girlfriend in a request for a protection order, which she filed in court last week. In the documents, she describes several unwanted visits Eckert made to the home she shares with her 3 children in the middle of the night. She says that on 2 occasions in recent months, Eckert climbed into her bed and sexually assaulted her while she was sleeping. Last week, we told you that Eckert had been arrested for the sexual assault of his roommate's girlfriend. He was suspended from his job after his arrest on March 30th. A police officer in South Londonderry, Pennsylvania, who was charged with sexual assault last month, resigned from his job on Tuesday. The Lebanon Daily News says that Officer Richard Diamond was arrested in February for having a sexual relationship with a 16-year-old who was the victim of 2 other sexual assaults that the officer was investigating. Diamond is charged with sexual abuse of children and corruption of minors. He was placed on paid suspension in February, and his resignation takes effect immediately. 2 Baltimore, Maryland police officers were convicted by a grand jury last Friday on 30 charges related to a corruption investigation. WBAL reports that officers William King and Antonio Murray were accused of using their authority as police officers to illegally detain drug dealers, who they would also rob of their drugs and money. King and Murray would then sell the drugs or use them to pay off confidential informants.
I'm very insulted. I mean, anybody in their right mind, knowing the runs that I had on that car and to look at the runs that they had put in that, on that car, would have known that they were not the runs.
We have 3,300 sworn officers, close to 3,400 sworn officers. Not every one of them follows our general orders. It has been Commissioner Hamm's highest priority since he took over last March to maintain the integrity of our department. And we have done that for the last year. We've been doing that for several years. We've been extremely proactive in terms of identifying officers who violate our general orders and in some rare cases break the law.
It does affect our citizens as well as our ability as prosecutors to successfully prosecute cases. Ultimately, it affects our ability to successfully prosecute many cases in the city. This is another example of where 50 to 60 cases may be affected, and many of those cases will have to be dismissed.
A Baltimore, Maryland police officer was arrested last Friday for stealing the rims from a car that was seized as evidence during an investigation. The Baltimore Sun says that Officer Che Jackson is charged with theft over $500, hindering or obstructing an investigation, and misconduct. The rims were reported stolen when the vehicle was returned to its owner. Investigators later discovered the rims on a car owned by Jackson. He is expected to be suspended without pay. A Portsmouth, Virginia police officer was arrested on Monday and charged with grand larceny. WAVY reports that Officer Antonio Jackson is accused of failing to turn over evidence that was seized when he responded to a crime scene in May 2005. He resigned from his job shortly after he was questioned about the missing property. Jackson is currently free on bond. A Daytona Beach, Florida police officer was arrested last Thursday and charged with unlawful sexual activity with a 17-year-old. The Orlando Sentinel says that Officer Paul Passamonte is accused of getting a 17-year-old girl pregnant and then paying for her subsequent abortion. Passamonte has been placed on paid leave pending the completion of an investigation. A Hillsborough County, Florida sheriff's deputy was convicted on Friday of using police databases to help a friend track down and terrorize women. The Tampa Bay Tribune says that Deputy Charles May was found guilty by a jury on charges of conspiring to gain access to law enforcement databases, gaining access to law enforcement databases, and lying to the FBI when they questioned him later. He was accused of helping his friend track down women who had escaped abusive relationships with him. The information the friend got from May was used to kill the new boyfriend of one of his ex-girlfriends. His ex-girlfriend was also blinded when May's friend hired someone to throw acid in her face. May faces 20 years in prison when he is sentenced in July. He remains suspended from his job with pay. A sheriff's deputy in Escambia County, Florida, was charged last Thursday with the beatings of two handcuffed men. An Associated Press report says that Deputy James Sullivan is charged with one count of battery and two counts of aggravated battery. The charges are connected to arrests in December 2004 and February 2005. In one case, he is accused of striking a handcuffed man in the head with a flashlight. Sullivan resigned from his job in March 2005 in the midst of an internal investigation. A criminal investigation began after a complaint was filed with the state attorney's office last month.
The initial reports or allegations came a couple of weeks ago. There are a lot of other people that they interview, that they talk to, you know, maybe people that the offender works with. It's not unusual, though, for something to have happened to a child when they're younger, you know, under the age of six particularly, is when repression happens. If you have several victims, it certainly would make a case stronger.
A Montgomery, Alabama police officer was arrested on Monday for the sexual abuse of children. The Montgomery Advertiser says that Officer Samuel Spencer is charged with first-degree sexual abuse and first-degree sodomy. Spencer has been reassigned from the juvenile division and has been placed on administrative duty. The sexual abuse charge related to an incident that took place 10 years ago. The sodomy charge is related to a September 2005 incident. Spencer resigned from his job as he was being questioned by investigators on Monday. He is currently being held in custody on a $30,000 bond. As of last Thursday, 80 New Orleans police officers have been fired for abandoning their posts after Hurricane Katrina. An Associated Press report says that 60 more officers have been suspended so far. Hundreds of officers were unaccounted for following the August 2005 hurricane. A Tulsa, Oklahoma police officer who was arrested last month is now facing new charges in the same case. An Associated Press report says that Officer Rico Yarbrough was charged last Thursday with witness tampering. He was charged last month with criminal conspiracy, obstruction of justice, and illegally giving notice that a search warrant was about to be executed. Yarbrough has been suspended from his job with pay. A Phoenix, Arizona police officer was sentenced to 6 months in jail after he pleaded guilty to computer tampering last week. The Arizona Republic says that Officer Juan Rivera was placed on paid leave last October when the charges against him came to light. Rivera is accused of using police computers to run illegal searches of names over a 2-year period. The searches were of names of Rivera's fellow police officers and women who he either dated or had met while performing his duties as an officer. In addition to the jail time, Rivera was also stripped of his law enforcement certification.
This is a very upsetting video showing 11 fully conscious pigs being shot with taser stun guns. They are shot with these 50,000 volts of electricity until they topple and convulse and are clearly screaming. Although, of course, the audio was not provided by the Air Force. You can just see the excruciating pain that these animals are in and for what reason. Tasers are already in widespread use, and there's plenty of human data out there.
A man died after being shocked with a taser by police in Clearwater, Florida, last Wednesday. A man was hospitalized on Monday after he was shocked with a taser by police officers in Santa Rosa, California. Paramedics were able to revive the man when he stopped breathing after the officers subdued him. A sheriff's deputy in Hudson, Florida, shocked a 92-year-old man with a taser last Thursday. A teenager who was shocked with a taser 16 times by Portage, Indiana police officers filed a lawsuit last week. The three police officers named in the lawsuit, Brian Graves, Rob Maynard, and Philip Garzella, are accused of mistakenly believing that the child was intoxicated when he was actually choking on some food. A witness told the officers that the boy was choking, but they nonetheless shocked the boy repeatedly with a taser, as well as pepper spraying and hog-tying him. The lawsuit was filed by the teenager and his mother, who also witnessed the incident. The United States military conducted tests of tasers on live pigs in 2002. It was reported last week that the Department of Defense conducted the tests at a military base in Texas. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals used the Freedom of Information Act to obtain a video of the tests, which was distributed to the media. They say the tests are not necessary because of the availability of more reliable human data.
And the cops was coming from more down this way on both sides.
So I told my husband, I said, there's cruisers out there, and I seen officers chasing whoever they was chasing that way.
And he walked right up to his car, started up, and backed up to that driveway right there. And then I heard bangs and heard one of them say, I shot his tire.
We were able to spike his tires. Suspect did exit here at East North Broadway. He lost control of his vehicle between Eisenhower and Reese. Officers also got out of their car. Shots were fired. The suspect was hit in the upper body and was pronounced here at scene by the fire department. Because of the information that the suspect did have a gun, we wanted to make sure we had plenty of officers here to take the situation.
We grew up together, and I've always been around him.
He was on the phone with his sister when the shots were heard.
At several points, the officers were ordering the person to put the gun down. The suspect did not comply with that order.
He turned around, and they stated that he pointed the gun, which, no, I don't believe in that one. Not if he's going to hurt himself, and they opened fire.
He was trying to do the right thing. He wanted to get off the streets, stay off the streets. Most of all, what I would want people to know, if you see the signs, get him help. Just get him help, because he didn't get the help that he needed.
Other than the killings already reported on this program, police also killed people this week in Modesto, California, Elk Grove, California, Victorville, California, Summit, Illinois, Litchfield, Michigan, Columbus, Ohio, and Windsor, Ontario. At the end of each Bad Cop No Donut, I have gotten into the habit of reading a list of place names where people have been killed by the police in the past week. Until tonight, we have not taken the time to reflect on the real impact which these killings have on people's lives. On November 9, 2004, Michael Edward Bell was shot and killed by police in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Earlier today, I spoke with Michael's mother, Kim Bell, about the night she watched police kill her son, a subsequent lawsuit filed by the surviving family members, and the officers who received awards for bravery and courage for their actions on the night of Michael's death.
It's 2:10 a.m. in the morning, and he's driving home from the bar from Harborside. He just got done playing pool that night.
And he's driving home with one of his friends back to your home, I guess.
Yes. He was driving back to our house. He was driving Brian Rocco's Ford Explorer because Brian Rocco had a little bit too much to drink, and he was more than welcome, you know, to spend the night at our house. And then Mike was having one of his friends over, the one that has the white vehicle that's parked by the tree. Craig L., was going to play pool with Mike as well because we have a pool table in our garage.
So they were all coming home to your place to play pool?
Yeah, for a little bit because they all had work the next day. Of course, I don't know how sometimes my son slept on 5 hours of sleep and still pulled more than a 12-hour day.
At some point when he's on his way home driving his friend's SUV, a police officer decides for a reason that's not clear to us right now that he's gonna follow Michael home.
Well, what happened also was that there was two police officers pulled on our 14th Avenue, and their lights were going because the dash cam's going, and so is the dash cams are going. The dash cams are going on both of the two police officers' vehicles, and they could see Michael come home, but they said that they just pulled somebody over prior. And Officer Strasbaugh honestly said that he knew where Michael lived at, and he just had a run-in with Michael on September 15th, so he knew exactly where Mike lived.
So what was the run-in on September 15th about? This is less than 2 months before the night we're talking about.
Yep. Mike didn't hear him, and he was over by the truck, and when Mike didn't hear what was going on, the guy honestly pulled him onto the ground and started knee strikes on my son. And my son got arrested that night. So spent the night in jail that night and then went to work the next day. And then he was complaining about his back hurting and he could hardly walk. He had bruises on him, mm-hmm. and his back was bruised and everything. Strasbaugh did over 6 knee strikes on Michael and kicked him and had him land right on his back.
And Michael had not committed a crime. He was just not as responsive to the police officer as the police officer would have liked.
Right. And Strasbaugh said that Mike tried to trip him, but Mike said that he didn't do any such thing. You know, this police officer, he said this cop honestly had something on him and he didn't know what it was.
So less than 2 months later, Michael's driving home. Two police cars decide to follow him home. Michael doesn't stop, presumably because of the fact that he's been beaten by these cops within 2 months of the date in question.
Well, he has two stop signs. You can see Michael coming down the street on 14th Avenue. He has two stop signs that he stops for. He's already home. Strasbaugh, as I read, says to Widener, I'm going to go check this out. So he gets in his vehicle, and you can see him turning to come down our street. Well, Mike's already home, and Mike's got his hands in his pocket, and Craig's watching what's going on because he's getting his jacket from the back to go ahead and play pool with Mike, and Mike's calling to say, I'll be home in a little bit. I'll be, you know, home like in 10 minutes. Come on and let's play pool. So Brian's in the passenger seat, and Mike is already out, and Strasbaugh's saying, get back in the car, get back in the car. And Mike's like, what's going on, what's going on? So he takes Michael, and from what you can see from the dash cam, he's got his hand on Mike's throat, and he's choking him, and he's starting to put him into the vehicle. And then all of a sudden, I don't know why, you know, he takes him off the vehicle completely and takes him off the dash cam, and you can see him with the shadows and everything, that that there's something going on. And Mike's like, I didn't do anything wrong. And he's like, well, I'm going to arrest you. And he's like, I know my rights. I didn't do anything. Quit kicking me. Quit hurting me. Quit hurting me. And then you could hear the taser going off, and it went off for 21, 22 seconds, which equals 220,000 volts of electricity, 22 seconds.
This is all happening right in front of your house, right? This is where
this
you
is
live?
It's happening in front of our house, and then there was a loud noise on our house, up against the side of our house, like you would have, like your house would rattle, but a big boom and a shake and everything, that everything was like a big boom where everything just moved. And it woke Shantae and I both up. There were lights going on because my window is right above on the same side of the street. I woke up my daughter Shantae, told her something was going on, and we went downstairs. Our security light from our backyard that's on the garage is flashing into the hallway and part of my room, and we went downstairs and we're going down the stairs in from our downstairs into the front room, into the kitchen, and you could see something going on outside. And we go down the stairs for the back of our deck, and there are two men that I didn't realize at that moment were police officers. And I told them to stop, please stop, or I was going to go ahead and call the police. And then I realized that they were the police. And it was my son in handcuffs, hunched over, and these men were kneeing and kicking my son. And they were using their arms to go ahead and hit my son in the face with their arms in their elbows.
This is in the backyard of your house now? They've moved around from the front yard where Michael was tasered, and they've somehow made their way around the back, and I assume that going around the back is the loud noise that woke you and Shantae up.
Yes, and you could tell that on my parked white van that's right behind Michael's, parked right behind Michael's Nissan, that because we have four cars in our driveway that were all parked in here.
Mm-hmm.
And there were handcuff markings with the scratches on it and three dents into my white van. And I tried to pull that police officer off my son. I pushed him. I tried to get him off. I told him to stop, please stop. He was going to hurt my son. He could hurt my son. Please stop or he could kill him. And he told me to get back, and I told him no, and I'm trying to push him out of the way, and he's like, get back, and I said no, and he's like, get back or I'll arrest you. So I probably pushed him four times, and, you know, he was pushing me out of the way, and then the last time he gave me a good shove, and Shantae caught me, and then Michael's left leg was moving behind his back, and he's hunched over and he could barely move, and I'm screaming for somebody to please help us, and nobody was around to help us. And Michael moved away from me and Shantae, and he moved away from me and Shantae so we wouldn't be in danger, and they pulled Michael and they pulled him up against his car. And then they pulled him up with his body, and there's more markings on my guitar, and then they broke Michael's the driver's mirror with all the force, and then they pinned Michael down on his car as we're still screaming. And I wish they could have just stopped and run, because every time I go over it, he's still alive.
There's two police officers. They're holding Michael down on his car, and he's being beaten. And then a third police officer shows up. That's my understanding of the story. Is that...
Yes, the third one is Lieutenant David Kruger shows up when Strasbaugh and Weiner are on Michael. And before... he says something to Michael, and you can see the shocked look on Mike's face. And then he lays Michael's head down on Michael's car. And all the force... with force that was on Mike's body, they really pushed him and pushed him and pushed him on there like a couple of good times, and Mike's trying to still move it and telling him to get off of him. Get off me, get off me. And what happens is we're screaming for someone to help us, is this officer comes in and the Strasbaugh screams, he's got my gun, he's got my gun. And the fourth officer's coming in as we're screaming within those 40 seconds and says, does he have your gun, Straws? And never looks, cocks the gun, presses it up on Mike's head as we're screaming, please don't shoot him, don't shoot him. He doesn't have your gun. He doesn't have the gun. Please don't shoot. And it's pressed up again so hard, and then they looked to see what was going on as we're still screaming, please don't shoot him. He did nothing wrong. He doesn't have your gun. You can see from the security lights on the garage that are shining on the handcuffs, and he didn't resist, and he didn't do anything, and they shot him in the head, and they fell to the ground, and he's bleeding, and they're screaming us to get back in the house. Get in the house now. And I was crying, and I'm crawling, and I'm trying to move, and these two other police officers come in. One comes in the house with us, and the other one guards the back door. And the officer in here, all I can remember that both of the cops that took us in to the hospital, because neither one of us could drive, both of them were named John.
These four police officers, I understand that several months after this...
May 15th, on Chente's birthday, got an award for their bravery and their courage from Wisconsin Police.
What were the names of the three officers who got the awards? Was Strasbaugh...
Strasbaugh, number one. Eric Weiner, which is related to the assistant chief of police that just resigned.
Okay.
Yep. Albert Gonzalez, the one that shot my son in the head.
Were these awards given to them for their actions on this night?
Yes, they were from the WPPA. They were given the award to these four officers, even though we called in right as soon as we found out as well that there was no DNA on the gun or the holster, and they told us that DNA does not count. Chief Wade never even looked at any of our statements. He justified the ruling within days and never even looked, and believed the four officers. And these four officers, three out of the four, got an award for their actions. Our DA Jambois came in the room. Well, the two officers that were with us were worried about me, thought I was going to have a heart attack, thought I needed an ambulance. I just wanted to know if my son was okay. He was out there bleeding. And from what I understand, they were out there taking pictures of my son. They never even looked to see if he was breathing or not. And then they found out that he was alive. and he went for the flight for life. Our DHM voice that walked in the room, I asked him what's going on and why do our police do this? And they're not supposed to kill our children. They're supposed to be there to serve and protect us. They're not supposed to kill our kids. But our DHM boys justified this shooting as well for no DNA on the gun in the holster.
So the police are sticking to their story that even though they're and you and Shantae are not the only witnesses, right? There were
right.
I was going to say I read some witness statements from your neighbors who witnessed witnessed part of what happened too.
They live on the other side of us because we live in a townhouse, and they could see what was going on in their front window, which is their bedroom in the front, mm-hmm. where the officers were on kneeing and kicking Michael, and they could see what was going on, and they could see what was going on in their back window. Through their back window, they could see what was going on as well.
And they gave you witness statements that were helpful to you, right?
They came in to give statements to our private investigator that my kid's dad hired, so that way we would have a private investigator check this out. And they gave their statement as well. And Jake said that lived next door with Charlene that Michael was assassinated. He was shot in the head, like you would do in a Nazi camp. They just shoot him.
You told me something else that is a big concern to me also, and that is that you were the police in Kenosha, Wisconsin, the town where you live, have a bit of a record with this kind of thing. Michael is not exactly an isolated incident. First of all, how many people live in Kenosha, Wisconsin?
90,000.
90,000. So it's still a very small town with a very small police force, and my understanding is that the police in Kenosha, Wisconsin also killed four other people.
Yep, they shot, which happens to be a real good friend of mine with everything that has happened in Michael in these 17 months. They shot Kelly Combs in his basement, which is his room, and the mom called for a counselor, and the counselor called the police. The police persuaded their way in. They came downstairs, and Kelly was he had a knife in his hand, but he wasn't a killer. I don't know why some people use that inflicted pain on themselves, but he told him to get out of his room, get out of his house, and please leave. And they told him to drop the effing knife, and he wouldn't. And so they shot him 2 times in the head, 3 times in the chest. There was 4 or 5 police there. All of them, they said, could not get a perfect aim on him, and 2 of the bullets ricocheted off, and one hit the furnace. And Widener was also involved in that shooting, as well as in Michael's. And he got an award out of this one. When Michael was at the hospital, I couldn't figure out why it was taking so long for Michael to get the flight for life. And they ran a UA on Michael to see if he had any drugs and alcohol in his system. And he had no drugs in his system, and it only showed 1.5 beers. And his vital signs were low, but the doctor said that he could have made it. And he died before the doors opened at the hospital. 12 contusions, over 32 abrasions, and 44 bruises.
So you think that Michael may have lived if the police had gotten him to the hospital faster?
Well, as far as I see from what Craig's statement says, they didn't even attend to Michael in the ambulance.
Oh, okay.
And what would have happened if they would have... If somehow we could have stopped this in the front yard, would they have gotten charged for excessive force and police brutality there? Or did they cover it up so much to kill him of what they did that they walked away with an award? After 17 months, that's where I'm at with this. We're fighting to make sure that this doesn't happen again, but then the knowledge of it all is what would have happened if this would have just been excessive force and police brutality.
But you're moving ahead, you and your family, with a lawsuit. Do you want to...
Yes, we have two lawsuits. We have a civil lawsuit going that we just... we waited for the city to reply, and they said they didn't have to reply, so then we took it to the court.
Okay.
And that was on November 9th we filed on Mike's anniversary date, death.
What are you and Michael's father and Michael's sister? What are you looking for? What would be an acceptable outcome to you for these lawsuits? Because I know that obviously a lawsuit is not going to bring your son back. But
that's all I would want.
Are you suing for damages, or is it a wrongful?
We're suing for damages, and we're suing for the wrongful death.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also suing for post-traumatic stress disorder, medication. We have our meltdowns, and I can't sleep without medication because this repeats every night, and I can't sleep without taking my medicine because otherwise I don't sleep at all. Or I'll see kids walking down the street saying, oh, that could be Michael. That could be Michael, and I'll end up going into the bathroom and just throwing up. I'll just get sick, and then I'll have it that a police officer follows me yesterday, and I thought I was just going to throw up all over on myself. They love to harass, they like to humiliate, they like to belittle, and I really think they like to get away with as much as possible and thinking they don't have to pay the consequences because they don't have to answer to nobody but themselves. We don't have an independent review board here in Kenosha, an independent investigation on anything. So a police officer can look at himself in the mirror saying, I did a great job, and move on to the next victim. And then we have it also that the kids are being beaten when they're brought in before they even get in their jail cells or in their jail cell. He told me of one other time that he was with some friends. They were all partying. You know, of course, you know, Mike got arrested because they were at this party. And what did they do? They took him in, they pepper sprayed him, and then they hosed him down in the jail cell, and then they beat the crap out of him. I didn't know about excessive force and police brutality and about filing a lawsuit or anything of this sort. I didn't really realize that Mike was a victim until it's too late. And now I look at it differently, that I should buy binoculars that have a camera in it to take pictures and email it to somebody. So that way if somebody does a crime, it's on video and I can send it to somebody so I don't have it in my possession.
Thank you.
I told people when it was the walk on November 9th, when we did Who's Police and the Police and Stop Excessive Force, that people should carry cell phones with pictures, have anything of proof, so that way they have proof.
Are you going to continue to have an annual protest?
Absolutely. My sister bought me a megaphone for my Christmas present. So wait until this year.
Thanks to Kim Bell for agreeing to speak with me. To find out more about this case, including video and witness statements, check out www.michaelbell.info. Bad Cop No Donut is produced at CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto and can be heard on community, low-power, nonprofit, pirate, and internet radio stations throughout the United States, Canada, and elsewhere. This program is also available as a podcast. If you would like to find out how to broadcast this program, if you would like to write us some new theme music, or if you have any comments or story ideas, please let us know. The email address for this program is ron@ckln.fm. We count on you to let us know what the police are doing where you live. Thanks to everyone who sent in articles for this week's show. I'm Ron Anisich. Thanks for listening.